Thing that I can say based upon what just happened in the summer since this draft was created, as well as the two fires, the Annapolis and the Lake George complex and the Kings County one. They did want a representative in their local coordination center 100%. Both municipalities did refuse because they just didn't have the staff for it, but I do anticipate, based on the discussion that we had at this meeting, that they are going to request there is somebody at that 100%. They originally wanted the equivalent of me, but Brian and Dan said 100% not. Run the coordination center and give us, do advisory and things like that. So they did it, but the province does still want them based on the verbal discussion, but it's not in here. So that's still very much up for discussion.
Is there no vision to determine that based on what kind of emergency is?
They want it 100%.
If Liverpool has localized funding, why would we need to activate the RVA?
I think that there probably is a pushback that would be more than the municipalities that are affected. However, it's still in
any more questions on the one of the own babies?
Not a question about the content, but the process, how this evolves now. Can you clarify?
I'm not aware of any, in all honesty. I think it'll come being more popular.
Sure. So there's a CAO table where we discuss new things. There was a lengthy discussion about different methods of mobilization for rural units. And the value being that you can have to make remotely. So that's back on for more discussion on the 26th. And so what we do is we go through and talk about most of what's included in here and try to get a consensus. But there's a disconnect between primarily rural CAOs and the province on how we think it should operate. So we're having limited success in getting a step back with some things in other areas that are more aggressive, which is they want it their way. That's the expectation. But we haven't perceived in future crisis.
Why don't we invite Mark Perry to come to our next pre-map meeting?
He's in charge of it.
Yeah.
So he knows the difference between urban and rural. He lived in rural.
Yeah, so why don't we ask when we come to our next REMAC meeting? Nope, that's the community. The example I use of Liverpool, if you should know some of that, you would think it doesn't make sense.
So one of the things that came out of them standard is that they realized by funding to municipalities, there is no grant funding for representative density, going for this program about 2 years ago, I believe, and the first one. What they've done is enrolled out a 4-year funding program. We applied for all 4 years. They decided that only go award 1 year at a time. And the intent behind for new remodes that have to join is to provide the funding for getting the program up and running, to go through legal and all of those things to kind of create the base program up and running. For those of us who are an existing one, it is for us to be able to move the program forward based on the standard. So we did put a proposal in. And it's under the 4-year program. It's so for us, 20,000 municipalities. So for us, we've got 5 municipalities to qualify for $100,000. We have been awarded $100,000 for year one. Out of that, we have to put in 25%. So for year one and two, they provide 75%, we put in 25%. Year three, it's 50%. Year four, 75% is on us, 25% is on there. So for the first year, which what we put in was to have a consultant to provide training and materials for all the different positions within the regulations that are based on the ICF and how we fund it, and to have a full exercise at the end of the completion of that, to update the alternate seats of the one instructors for satellite homes and triple ball rates based targets. And one E-Center, one L landline in both of the information centers as redundancy, and additional 3 laptops for staff. And anything over and above that will take it off as coverage for the staff salary. That's also provided for it. So we put that in for year one. We just got a new award that it has been official. And so linking back to the comment of the using some of Rebecca's salary allocations, although they just awarded it to us, it has to be used by March 31st of this fiscal year. Quite unfortunate. Yes, eyes wide open is right. So thankfully, in this case, I'm going to be proposing that we pull the $25,000 from the line item of Rebecca's to be able to offset for this, because, again, she didn't start in September. And then we will start working on this straight away. And then when the next year's grant application comes up, we'll be applying again for the next $100,000. I have two from the province, was one about the revenue grant, which we just talked about, and also the network is all waiting to hear more from the standard, so nothing too significant from them. I think at the NREMA ones, I'd like to have it. The first one is probably data housing buyers, just for awareness purposes. So it's a significant amount of time in August. We sent 55 departments over the course of 17 days, and we made sure that we had coverage at home, but also being able to support the finders over there. In speaking with some of the staff, they did realize their number one thing, similar to what has been covered in Shelburne fires, was that they needed to have more staff. So, looking back to us, I think we're well on our way to that. I think the governance policy also leads to that. But we have already named that as a high priority since the flood and fire. So I think that we're well on our way from there. I think the two other things that I would have identified from a leadership and council perspective is the length of activation. So they were activated for 7 weeks in their coordination. So this is where you can see we need the length of the time and number of staff or multiple shifts of remote. And there was time where they needed more staff and they started to upscale for more evacuations as things kind of settled. They, you know, took some of their staff back, and then when they issued more evacuations or re-entered, they had to. So it was kind of a fluctuating thing. And then the other thing I think of note to it is, and this would probably apply more to MODL and to Chester, but I want to share it to everybody because I think it's going to touch to everybody, is what they had to do, because they are in a similar situation to us, is their ECC is in council chambers. So that meant that they had to either take everything down off the walls, move their coordination center, disrupt there in order to have their council meeting. So that would be a discussion. I know we've always said it's going to be fine, but not really, I think, thought that it's going to be something like 7 weeks. Now, in one way, it was over the summer, so they had a few less council meetings. So one recommendation or discussion, and it's not even a recommendation, it's just a discussion, is if that was to happen and we're using one of the things, coordination centers, could our councils be potentially at one of the towns, or is it going to be that we need to close up the coordination center in order to pass it back to like that? So I think it's just a discussion point that we can all talk about, because we've never thought that it was going to be of such scale, I don't think, but we're starting to see more and more. So those would be kind of the two things, you know, knowing that we're going to have more staff in the length of time. 7 weeks is a long time before they kind of unwound their coordination center and they're working, excuse me, from recovery in their offices as well as their counseling. So I don't know if you want to talk about that now or should go through the press club. Is that anything?
Probably it's something that each of the councils have to discuss with their,
yeah, okay.
You know, well, their comfort level, I think, right?
Well, I mean, like, I'm from a chat perspective, we would just go meet at Legion or four times or something.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And then some other highlights since the last meeting for October of July. You know, we've all agreed on the plan to use forward. We do have a formal training package that I've created for the 2026-27 period. So we'll be sharing that with the CHO as well as staff to get signed up to that. We have attended several emergency management and fire services meetings. And I would say between this fire service review as well as the DEM standards, municipalities should highly expect that there's going to be a lot more push down on them from both of those two reports and standards that are coming out. I've been working on training staff from Mayo and communications from Santa River, and while I'm back full time, we've done some fire smart and emergency preparedness presentations. Working very closely with long-term care facilities and Baltimore Care, who's not under long-term care but does service residents from that perspective, just to really ensure that they have plans for when they're evacuating and relocating. Oftentimes, they're wanting to use a lot of the same facilities that we are, so making sure we've got a really full mix from it and that they can work together on that. They too are getting a lot of push down from seniors and long-term care saying, it's on you guys and your local emergency management, and that's because a lot of care arms could not really be helping a whole lot. So a significant push internally as well for them. We've got two more conference centers on board. We're about 75% there for their application. And recently met with SODA, the South Shore Open Doors Association for shelter planning. Also went to a extra planner. So continuing moving along on all of our priorities.
Any questions for Android?
What is the total number of comfort centers that we have throughout the five districts?
Give me 2 seconds, I just did that. Just give me a little controller tree. I just need to do a little check. With these new two, we're going to be 28, including the home there as well, even though I don't have a favorite. So it'll be 28 once these two are 100% on.
And are they well dispersed?
I have 18 in this county of River, 4 in Chester, 4 in Bridgewater, 1 in Humboldt Bay, and 1 in River.
Is that dispersed process?
There's definitely pockets that could use some help, but we also, you know, it's hard if there's not anybody there. Yeah. And if you go onto the REMA website, I do have it broken out in a map. And so all of them are pinpointed as to where they are. In the LinkedInRema.ca, I'm comfort-centers.html.
In instance of your pockets, do you have an idea of just the little bit of markers in agreements, which can be sort of both sides of purview, but it happens?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that is the correct website. They do have stuff that don't want to sign up with Remo. Knowing though that they also do open to support residents within their areas. But the best we can do is just to ask them if they want to join. Other than that, yeah. And then there's some that you just hang up that could
this very thing off the relevant. If you know this already, at the NSFM conference, we had a presentation prepared with me.
Okay.
And they said very clearly that they are on deck to approach by renewal.
Right.
And they'll vacate and make their posts
Yes.
Available.
Yeah, they've done that for several in the US and they started to out west. So it's wonderful. I'm glad that they had that conversation. If anybody had the contact from who was there, that would be wonderful. I don't know if you or yeah, but yeah, okay, thank you. That would be great. Sorry,
the friend.
Yeah, I know, but he might not have that contact, but yeah. But yeah, that would be great. And for us, most likely a lot of people will be going to Halifax. So we try to keep people in their community as close to as they can, but there's all the time where we just can't necessarily
walk the barely around.
Yeah. As long as we felt well in summer, but it's up to the facility, I'm guessing, as well, whether or not they're going to. So yeah. That's great. So that's great news. I'm glad that they were there.
I think if I can just to give you a question about the pockets, and I think we had a pocket which shall like yours, New Ross, but they that's really not a pocket because they take care of the community here. So that can be a little misleading. I mean, when you say pockets, there's certain pockets are self-inflicted, I guess I call it.
Yeah.
That they look after them.
Yeah. And that's where I said, they're just not part of Remo.
That's right. There's no
problem.
Yeah.
So we had several like that.
I guess hoping they don't
get but they're still
the wrong idea that, you know, in different places in our British family does it. So they,
yeah.
I'll speak with the team, but, you know.
Angela, just real quick, I wonder if you could just outline the difference between the shelter and the comfort center, just so people understand the capability difference.
Yeah. Of that, the wishes for some comfort centers might be that they're going to provide coffee and tea. Others might not do anything. Some might provide snacks. Some might not. So it's really a place to it's generally when there's power outages, so they're coming in, charging devices, possibly getting information, and anything over and above that is great, but it's not a requirement. The only requirement really is that there is a generator, and ideally they have staff. We do have a few that we know if they ever stood them up, we would have to provide staff ourselves, and we would work from that depending upon where it is. Shelter then is different because it provides the actual overnight shelter. And generally, it's a larger facility. And if we ever need a shelter, it has to go through Remo and then up to the province, and it's serviced by the Canadian Red Cross. They have a contact with Department of Community Services. We support shelters. And that requirement is to have a generator to make sure that we have it. They take care of registration with the resident, or they're supposed to take care of, our volunteers. They'll take care of registration of residents. Making sure that there's food, psychosocial. If people, left home without meds and things like that, medications, they'll help with that. But all of that, if a comfort center thinks that they have anybody that's overnight, it's not just to have them in that same facility. We will probably be moving them. And it's only a few people Red Cross will shelter them in hotels.
Thank you.
We try to have a conversation with volunteers. Nobody's not. So our fire department opens up the fire department to the only station. It's controversial in our community.
Oh, I know.
People really want it, and it is the need. There are people who have no second force that can't get. And we've had some really cold days and nights that people were really cold. So people in the fire department have opened it up for people to get warm and just be around other people. In our culture, right, that we can't get people, we've been taking from those people to open a comfort station. And I think we tried, 2 years?
Yeah.
We don't even get it. And we got high-hearted volunteers who just do it because they care about the So do we frown on this, or it's really hard.
I know the situation with the home bank and not having volunteers, and that's one where if Remo needed to stand up, we know that we need to probably provide volunteers mostly through staffing. you know, I would say, is it frowned upon or not? Generally, if it's a weather-related incident, we ask people that if the RCMP and Department of Public Works are asking people to stay off the roads, that they don't open until the roads are clear, because we could be potentially putting people in harm's way. And then I would say from a home-based perspective, liability, if they're opening it, are you just opening it for people to come in on their own, or are there people there that are staffing it? So that's more of an insurance question that you would need to ask. Otherwise, most likely you're opening it as its own comfort center.
So is there legislation or policy that we can use to, you know, still in the power shop, we get a few on social media, why, you know, a warming station, because traditionally it has always happened. Now we're told we can't do that.
So who tells you you can't?
Pardon?
Who tells you you can't?
Well, my understanding was that we're just told that it's not exactly what they're supposed to do that.
You're in probably the exact same situation.
Well, my question would be, it would really help that if we are the actual official Reno Comfort Center, that's where we're sitting right now. That may be a little directive from Reno to us, if we can pass along to some other folks, that when we activate it as a comfort center, it's activated by us, by Reno.
Yeah.
Because we ran into some issues, and for the right, I mean, they were just trying hard, we're going to call. Not talk to anyone and not have anyone down here.
Yeah.
Doors unlocked, they come in, have coffee, unstaffed, and you know, they're all, they feel they're doing the right thing for the right reasons. But if it's an actual official Remo, you know, comfort center, then it should be really open and activated by us if we feel it's necessary.
So we do in order to be a comfort center through Remo, we do have a policy that was provided and signed off, I think, in 2020, which we actually allow the comfort centers to make that decision themselves, so that it's community-wide. Because I don't necessarily know what's going on in each specific community. Generally speaking, we would like it to be staffed. I think from both municipalities' perspectives, you should have it staffed by somebody. For safety and for legality reasons, but that's up to everybody else. If you're part of Rainbow, we do ask that you let us know when it happens. If you ask that or size, we'll put it on our website, we'll let Province know, we'll let 211 know, because if the public center is open, and we encountered this locally for Hurricane Dorian, there were several people that called EHSC, but all they really needed was to charge their medical equipment, but EHS called 211 and didn't know that we actually had any comfort centers open because it wasn't there. They sent people to the hospital. If they didn't actually need to be at the hospital, they just couldn't be at home. So by us asking if they let us know, we also share it to a lot of our entities, and then we share it on the radio and on the Facebook and things like that. Ideally, they are staffed.
They're not staffed by Reno, right? So Reno,
that's what I do. Facilities entity. So that's where, from the municipality, I would say make sure that your insurance would cover and is okay with the facility being open, that people can just come and go and do whatever they want. If there's not somebody there, like a facility staff person,
No, I mean, I just asked, but desires is obviously probably more internal that we have to deal with.
Yes.
Sometimes it's open and we wouldn't know.
Even before things happen, and usually when the people are asked to stay
off. I've only known we opened because I saw it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, then I think that's the same in my home base. It's not about whether we want to open it or not.
Because
it's the how it's been done.
Sort of.
Ooh, that's dicey and tough facility. So it's finding a way to encourage it while covering the liability that we would incur by encouraging it.
To Jamie's point, I also don't want to ruffle any feathers with the chief, who's so kind to give up his time. He posts on Facebook and said, come to the fireball. And there's quite a few of my residents that take advantage of that. So making sure that, you know, we're not smudging them by saying we're going to decide when you open, but working with them.
Yeah. We have a Remo policy, which was made from the recommendation from Remac, that we as Remo will never ask unless it's a Remo-led response. 100% of it is on the facility. So that's where, you know, from a legality issue, you guys have to put that individually. But yeah, yours is usually open before the storm actually arrives, and then it's there during. And I'm aware, I mean, we know, but if we can do it once roads are clear, it's much safer. And I would think if there's somebody here to actually, you know, just if somebody was to fall and nobody else is in the building, it could be a leg before somebody else actually helped.
The question comes up sometimes where municipal councillors could be staffing. And there's also the issue for removal that elected officials not get involved with remote activities. So.
Right. So, generally speaking, when we're in a large activation like a flood, which is when we have councillors not to move a point that I will not be on, which is okay because I have different opinions than others. But I think that you're there for your residents. How you want to do it, that's up to you. I think when we were in the full activation, which is where it came out that Remo didn't want it, is we're also trying to navigate this balance of not promising things that Remo isn't aware of, which is often what the council will want to do. And they're trying to do the best for the residents, which is wonderful. But if it doesn't come back to Remo to try to enact it, who's actually leading the response? That's where there can be some dichotomies and some challenges to it. If you're going to open them on a, you know, just because there's a power outage or something, that's up to you guys to do. Do you have the staff capability to do that in their time? Generally, we would want a minimum of two people in a facility at all times, which is one of the guidelines that we put in for safety purposes. You should always have an intervention. But when we're in a large activation, that's where Remo really does like to lead it, so that if things are being recommended and or promised in the comfort center, that we're aware of it so that we can act on it. Otherwise, it's not necessarily, it could be a failed outcome to the resident then because we weren't even aware of it. That's kind of where the delicate balance is. Yeah.
And the issue for that comes to residents have no idea of the boundaries that we have in terms of what we can be planning. It's the elected official in the comfort center. They start making requests. We've had it in the past where that elected official has said, you know, leave it with me, which implies I'll take care of it. That's in the comfort center and service. None of us should be in that condition of it. But, yeah, it comes down to the public's perception of, are you there because you're a citizen of the home day wanting to help, or are you there because you're an elected official there to be in the comfort center? So,
yes, and our vision is that we will be building a volunteer roster. That's hopefully a appropriate place for a counselor who's interested in being available for those things.
But you'll be trained under the umbrella of Remo of what you should and should not be using if you're under that.
So that you know, if you get put in an uncomfortable spot where someone decides to grill you about why a decision was made on emergency response, or if someone's asking you to provide something you don't know if you can provide it, you'll have received training as a volunteer for an evacuation center that you won't be put in that. So that it's not that you don't have expertise or valuable efforts making sure this is going to be effective, but not put you in a difficult spots and not compromise our ability to serve our needs.
And that's much more on the larger activation side. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Penny, just my real life experience with the comfort center, that's when we had the Washington Shoreland Improvement Association as a comfort center before the fire department is now. But so when we had the storm, I was on the board for the Washington Shoreland. So I called people on the board and said, can we open this up? I called the fire chief and we had people come in and we were staffed there. And you know, when people came in, we put signs out, and in a practical sense, that worked great with that kind of evacuation. But when Anthony was talking about bigger, it's absolutely a Remo. But for me, and I spoke with the fire department because they are now the comfort center because they have the generators. They're the designated one in our area, in my district. And so, and as Angela said, it's up to the individual comfort center to open. So I think in my view, the councillor, well, I took, you know, you look after your residents best way you can. You know, I'll call the chief and say, you know, do you want to open a health center, the comfort center? And he'll say yes. And I'll say, if you need staff or you need anybody down here, I can be there. You know, and that's just the way I approach it. So I don't know if that helps or anything like that. That was my experience with opening hours.
Thoughts?
Just for the record, could I get, could you reiterate for me who motioned and seconded for proceeding with our grant? Does anyone? Oh, thank you. Thanks, sorry.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
You're welcome.